What's up, Office fans? It's Nathan here, host of the Off 5. I've got good news and I've got bad news. The bad news is we did not record the episode for Survivor Man yet. If you don't like The Office, maybe that's good news. If you don't like The Off 5, maybe that's good news. But if you like The Off 5, that's bad news. Here's the good news is that we have a new podcast called The Sex and the City, the podcast, where we're going to do the exact same thing we do at The Office, but with Sex and the City. Now, if you don't like Sex and the City, perhaps that's the bad news. And the good news is, I guess you didn't get any good news in that case. In which case, I was trying to think of something good that's happened recently that I could tell you is good news in the world. Nothing's coming to mind, though, because it's 2020. Oh, boy. Oh, I thought of some good news. The audio quality is better on this podcast than the Off 5 has been the last couple episodes, and that will continue into the Off 5 because I figured some things out. So anyway, the Sex and the City of the podcast, if you like this, you can go and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, wherever. And of course, if you don't like this podcast or you don't like Sex and the City in general, I'll see you in a couple weeks with the Off 5. No hard feelings.
All right.
Cheers.
Cheers. Clink. Welcome to our brand new podcast. It's called The Sex and the City, the podcast. And it's a podcast where we talk about Sex and the City.
We're two friends that met on Craigslist to record a podcast about the Off 5 a few years ago. And on that podcast, while we were talking, we learned we both like Sex and the City. And we're like, let's record a podcast about Sex and the City. There aren't any of those, are there? And at the time, there weren't that many. Now there are.
Well, I mean, here's the thing is that when we're recording an Office podcast, we're making Sex and the City references, and we kind of intend to do the same thing. We're recording a Sex and the City podcast, so we'll probably be making a lot of Office references.
That's right. And since The Office is actually the more broadly appealing show, I think people will get those. And if not, they will wonder why we say so many strange things. Apropos of nothing.
Which is actually just what happens to me in my real life, so I'm not worried about it.
Me too. This episode's written by Darren Star. It's called Sex and the City. It's the pilot. That's why it's called that. And it's June 6, 1998 was when it came out. And it was directed by Susan Seidelman, the filmmaker that made Desperately Seeking Susan. Maybe Seidelman. About her. Who knows? Yeah.
So in this podcast, we're going to go through the episode, not in order, because that's boring. We're going to go through it through segments. So we do the same thing in our Office podcast, and it works pretty well. So we're going to try it for this one.
First up, we got a description of the episode to remind you what happens in this episode, if you haven't seen it in a while. It's called The Deets, and it comes right from the DVD menu, I think. I transcribed it from the DVD somewhere.
Right from the source.
Oh my gosh. Okay. At a birthday party for 30-something Miranda, 30-something, Carrie and her friends vow to stop worrying about finding the perfect male and start having sex like men. Woohoo! Carrie experiments with an old flame and meets Mr. Big. Miranda warms up to Skipper. Samantha has a one-night stand with a man Charlotte wouldn't sleep with on the first date.
All right. So right off the bat, we got Mr. Big in there. We've got all the friends doing their thing. Slightly related plot lines that have tied together by Carrie's investigative journalism.
That's right. She does the research by having sex like a man.
And then we've also got another situation going on. So we have a cold open in this episode. Sort of.
It's not super cold, but because it's after the credits. But it's a scene that's unrelated to the rest of the episode. And it's about a couple of people called
Elizabeth and Tim. It's about their meeting. Elizabeth is moving from London to Manhattan and meets Tim at an art opening, which is very New York of them.
That's right.
And all the while, we're getting the storyline from a voiceover, which we find out later is our main star of the show, Carrie Bradshaw.
And we get a montage that includes one of the hallmarks of Sex and the City, which is people having a real estate agent show them places and then having sex.
Not in that order.
Oh, I thought you were... People having dinner together and people having cocktails.
People having hot and steamy pho.
Actually, Miranda and Steve do like to go have pho, so.
Who doesn't?
So our cold open, our warm open couple is actually fated to break up. And that's when we are introduced to Carrie, when she tells Elizabeth, you didn't know about New York. This is not a place to find love. And she's doing this while smoking a cigarette, which was very in, apparently, in the 90s.
Yeah,
not so much anymore.
MacBooks and cigarettes. That's what it was all about.
And frizzy, frizzy hair.
It's like comparing Apple computers to cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. It's apples to cigarettes. Doesn't make any sense.
Cigarette a day keeps the doctor employed. So here's a segment we like to do. It's a lighter segment. It's called How the Turntables Have Phrase, where we talk about some of the great lines that are in this episode. Do you have any of those?
I was under the impression that I was just collecting pickup lines, so I did this homework incorrectly.
No, that's fine. That's a little part of it. What do you got for pickup lines?
So Tim says to Elizabeth, you like it, about the art. That's his pickup line. And Elizabeth says, yeah, it's interesting. So that's our first meet cute of the first season of the first episode ever in Sex and the City is, you like it?
Interesting. I thought the pickup line was the next one. I feel like I know you from somewhere.
Mm.
Does that work?
It starts a
conversation, right? Because then you're like, oh, and most people don't remember people that well. Nobody's just like, no. Because like, I remember every person I've ever seen.
Don't.
I have a weird condition and you don't know me. So, you do kind of know me because I'm kind of famous. You probably recognize me from when I was walking down the street looking so good.
Yeah, I guess you're right that pickup line, I guess it depends on how you define a pickup line, because this is where he starts the conversation. But really to get, you know, the interest peaked is when he says, I think I know you from somewhere. And that, you're right, is what gets the conversation started. That's kind of still bland.
Yeah, but I feel like you need something to actually start the conversation, because if you just said, do you like it? And they were like, yes, you could be like, me too. Or I guess you could say something about art if you know about art. But I would try to imagine, because I'm not an art person, if you went to a concert and so you're like, you like this song? And they were like, yeah. And you'd be like, yeah, it's a good song.
Do I know you from somewhere?
But you'd be like, did I see you at Gogo Bordello? And then they'll be like, oh, I was there at Gogo Bordello. And you'd be like, yeah, wearing purple and stuff. And then they'd be like, let's talk more once this song is over.
Did I see you at Chaos, the club?
Chaos. Well, there's another pickup line. Did you get another one of those?
Yeah. The next one I have is Carrie, and she's trying to get with Kurt Harrington. So she's out on a lunch date with Stanford Blatch, one of her BFFs. And then she sees Kurt and she says, oh, he was a mistake at 26, 29, and 31. And then she goes over to him and talks to him and says, so you seen anyone special? That's kind of a pickup line.
Oh, interesting. I again took the next line.
What is it?
Something about, I thought we weren't talking anymore after a while. And then, you know, and then she says, who said anything about talking?
So for you, the pickup line was, who said anything about talking?
Yeah, because I think that's the line where it's like, okay, well, let's get out of here and not talk.
Yeah. Okay. I see where you're going here. I think we need to, I think I'm picking out the preamble. To the pickup line.
You're shooting the hoops and I'm laying them up if they don't go in. No, that's a bad analogy because it's not like you missed the shots. I don't really know that much about sports, but you know, you're like saying the first thing and I'm saying the second thing as a turn of phrase. So before that, Stanford Blatch calls him the loathe of your life. I like that turn of phrase.
I'm going to start saying that. Oh, yeah. Is it the loathe of my life? Great. So... the other one that I heard was Big, and he's literally picking up Carrie in a car. It's after they're at Chaos, and after Carrie's like not able to find a cab, and he's with his private driver, and after he's turned down Samantha, he pulls up and he says, well, get in for Christ's sake. Is that a pickup line?
Yeah, because, I mean, she gets in the car, right? It's not literally a pickup, and he doesn't literally pick her up in the sense of his arms, but I like it. It's a good line. I don't like Mr. Big that much, but it's a good line, don't you think?
Wow, you're going to just pass judgment so soon?
That's true. I love Mr. Big.
Until he wrongs Carrie. Just wait.
Even
just
once, wait. And then, no, no, you know, like Charlotte says.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Get away from her. No, no.
I'm going to ugly cry about this.
I cursed the day you were born.
Let's do some cultural references in a segment called No One Goes There Anymore, where we talk about the things that are in this episode from 1998. The first category of references I have is called Sex and Things.
So we've got the Riddle of the Sphinx. Do you know what it is?
No, what is it?
Riddle of the Sphinx. It is when Carrie's trying to describe what it's like navigating that, like trying to get someone to have sex with you, but also not having an emotional connection. So the actual riddle is, what is the creature that walks on four legs in the morning, two legs at noon, and three in the evening?
Oh, I know this one, but I wouldn't be able to know it if I didn't already know it. It's like the morning, afternoon, and evening are the times of your life, and four legs is a baby when you're crawling, and two legs is an adult, and then three legs is when you have a cane.
Oh.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is man.
Okay. Sexist. What, woman can't have canes anymore?
Yeah. God.
Or walkers?
That would be
6 feet?
Six legs, yeah.
Yeah, or have four wheels because they're driving a hot Camaro, but then also four wheels because they're in a wheelchair. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Here's the real riddle of the Sphinx. So you like go up and you're like, great Sphinx, how do I get inside you or whatever? How do I, what's the point of the riddle of the Sphinx? Where'd your nose go?
And it's, he's not like, a pickup line.
Okay. And he's like, well, my child, how do you get someone to commit to you but also have sex with you? It's hard in this modern world.
Especially in New York.
And then you're like, I'm stumped. Didn't anyone tell you that love's dead in the Sahara or Cairo or wherever we are?
We're in Manhattan.
Well, I got some references to stuff. There's they reference, because I like when, you know, we got to reference some sex terminology. We got dildos and ultra textured Trojans with the reservoir tip.
Ooh.
How do you pronounce that word, reservoir? Do you say it like that?
Reservoir.
Okay, reservoir.
We hand a lot of those out at my work. Not the reservoir tip. I get the cheap ones.
What's the texture? It's ultra textured.
If it has ribs or like dots, it's for the woman's pleasure.
Is that a thing women like? They like getting sanded down during sex?
I mean, you really got it. In that case, you better have some water-based lube.
That's
not
right.
The oil, because that degrades the condom. So
that's right.
Use water-based.
It hurts the condom's feelings.
Degrades.
It makes it feel like less of a phylactic.
Less of a Trojan. So yeah, we've got those things. Those are something that Big kind of uses as his little pickup line.
The Trojans and dildos? Oh, just the Trojans.
No, the Trojans.
Because he picks them up.
For her. And he's like, oh.
Oh, this Yeah, just so many of these in her bag. And her bag is so small that, like, really prioritizing.
I know. It's like lipstick and condoms. That's about it.
Yeah. Well.
What else do we got for things?
And they just said dildos, so we'll talk about that in another episode where they talk more about dildos.
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Oh, I'm sure too. Here's a movie, though, reference. It's called The Last Seduction. Have you ever seen that film?
No, have you?
Of course not. It's called The Last Seduction, but it's a 1994 neo-noir electric thriller. How do you pronounce noir?
Just noir? Like reservoir.
Yeah, okay.
Reservoir or noir.
Erotic thriller film directed by John Dahl and features Linda Fiorentino, Peter Berg, and Bill Pullman.
If you have seen this, I would die.
Well, apparently somebody f***s up against a fence. Sounds pretty cool.
Oh, man. The other movie we have is Breakfast at Tiffany's. That's a classic.
Classic movie with some racial problems, right?
Yeah, but I mean,
Audrey Hepburn looks so good on that poster that I don't even believe that what I saw in the grocery aisle during my lifetime of what she looked like.
Are you saying that you shop at Target and get Audrey Hepburn posters for your
That's right.
wall art?
Yeah. Well, no, that and Fear and Loathing. Anything with a cigarette holder, I tell the stock boy. Go get them from the back.
The stock. Give me what you have with a cigarette holder. I'm classy.
Bring me your finest posters with cigarette holders depicted in them while I look at Star Wars toys. I'll pick that out because I want the good paint job.
Then we also have Cheers. That's not a movie, but it's a show.
Sure
it's like
is.
Where everybody knows your name. It's like that at Chaos, but they just forget it 5 minutes later. So that was a good cultural reference right there.
That's right. Because it's a show referencing a show. And we always love that.
And we love when it's like funny, quippy like that.
That's true. And we love The Office. Also, that's a show. We do a podcast about that one, too.
It's called The Off 5. You can check,
yeah,
it,
you
out
check it out
anywhere
right
that
there.
You listen
Whatever.
To podcasts.
Whatever you're listening to right now, you could probably find it. Let's do another segment, which we did a April Fool's episode of The Off 5 about Sex and the City, which is kind of what sparked this podcast. And we introduced a new segment for that podcast called Fashion Show, Fashion Show, Fashion Show at Brunch. And then we took that over to The Off 5. But let's do it for this one, too, because I feel like it's even more applicable here at Sex and the City.
Definitely. So I think the star of the show in terms of fashion, which you know we care a lot about here at the Sex and the City, the podcast, was Charlotte's green shimmery dress. And it had that classic 90s cut with the open back and like a halter, but not a halter that was casual. It was a very elegant cut and the elegant color on her skin tone. What do you think?
I liked the toxic bachelor climbing a wall in a what looks like Helly Hansen outdoor rain jacket. Is that fashion? Bad fashion.
That's fashion.
Fashion.
Carrie's cheetah print bustier.
Ooh, nice. What about Miranda's shoulder pads?
I mean, paired with her severe hair and suit at a club, I was like, okay, Skippy's not going to like this.
Scooter.
But he did.
Wait, what's his name?
Skipper.
It is Skipper.
But
oh, okay.
But she keeps calling him Skippy.
And I keep calling him Scooter. She's not going to enjoy our date.
Oh, poor Skippy. All right. Our next segment is called Friendship Never Goes Out of Style. Obviously, that's true. And we did talk about something that does go out of style, which is Miranda's shoulder pads. Thank goodness.
Oh.
Friendship.
You know what doesn't go out of style?
Friendship.
And Miranda Hobbs Esquire.
What's Esquire? Esquire.
I looked it up, but I didn't write it down. I think it's like a means you're an attorney or something.
Oh, yeah. And that's how she's introduced in. Also, it says unmarried woman.
Yeah. Miranda, Charlotte, and Samantha. No, not Samantha. But Miranda and Charlotte are both introduced as interview subjects as part of this first episode, in addition to just like some toxic bachelors and Skippy.
Skipper.
Yeah, whatever.
What the
whatever,
heck?
Skipper, shut up.
Whatever, Skipper, shut up. Is that your hand on my leg?
Excuse me, a woman is talking. Yeah.
I'm going to Costa Rica.
So let's give the one sentence theory of the subject for each of the four women. And the subject in this episode, I would say, is can women have sex without attachment, described as sex like men?
Yeah, which is like, again, very, you know, specific to these gender roles and stereotypes, which it's pretty pervasive in this show. I don't think that we should like analyze it to death, but maybe just mention it because it's worth mentioning now that we're in 2020 and this is 98.
Well, can I defend this show?
Oh, no. Yeah, go.
It's
go
written
for
by
it.
Men. No, I'm it is written by men. That's actually a flaw in this like first season. But they have Mr. Big at the end being like the opposite of that. And, you know, not to jump ahead, but Mr. Big does the whole you've never been in love to Carrie. And it actually, at the end of the episode, the show itself kind of flips that, where it kind of suggests that Carrie has been having sex without attachment because she's never been in love, and actually this mysterious guy has. So
that's a good point.
I do think that the show is kind of calling itself out, that premise anyway, because the premise is kind of shallow.
Yeah, and that makes it more believable or approachable. But I also think, like, when you're talking about the emotional connection that Carrie has, it is very superficial emotional connection. Like, we see that later on with all her relationships, pretty much. It's not, and you know, like, love is definitely a perception and it's your reality at the time. So love is different for every person, you know? And so, like, Big saying, yeah, absolutely, I've been in love. And Carrie, like, feeling that really hard is like, well, like, what is actually going on there? I want to explore that a little bit more, because what does love look like to Big, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, true. Yeah. Especially once we see more of that. But I do think that the show isn't, like, taking it as simplistically as Carrie is when she starts the episode, is all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. All right, I'll accept that.
And then also, you know, Carrie is like, she made the same mistake with Kurt Harrington when she was, whatever, three different ages. So, like, she's kind of been doing this before, I feel like. But maybe she's less attached now.
Well, I mean, and then Kurt, like, turns that on her and says, oh, you finally get it. And she's like, oh, wait. Because there's this idea that you cannot have love and power at the same time. And so once you start getting emotions, you're losing power, which is a weird way to look at love. It's like kind of dysfunctional.
Or if the person's not in love, they won't give you a job. Which is also a weird way to look at love.
Yeah, that is a weird way to look at love. Okay, my turn.
Let's go through the characters one by one. Let's start with Charlotte York. Little Charlotte.
Charlotte. So originally we are at Miranda's birthday party, and this is where we kind of get the overview of what each character stands for and what their personalities are.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlotte is like such a believer in love. And then we've kind of got a spectrum from Samantha to Charlotte, and Carrie and Miranda fall somewhere in between. At least that's the way I saw it.
Carrie and Miranda. And then Carrie might be a little bit more towards Charlotte than Miranda.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say Charlotte York's, like, one sentence take on this having sex without attachment is giving up on love is sick.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree. And she goes on a date with someone who is like an eligible bachelor. He's hard to get with, like Carrie tells us. And the date is going smoothly as far as Charlotte knows. And she's like, gotta play it like she's interested, but not easy. And she's like, kind of constantly trying to be this like gracious, beautiful, intelligent, but kind of meek girl for this dude.
Mm-hmm. For the art guy?
Yeah, the guy who has the painting that she wants to see.
Yeah. So they do have something in common. They have different levels of wanting to have sex today, so it doesn't seem like it's going to work out. But we got the Charlotte perspective, which is that you got to hold out for love, and that means, you know, not having sex right away. Definitely putting more time into building the personal relationship and stuff like that. And in this one, she gets burned. Doesn't mean it's a bad way to live, but in this one, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, Capote—that's the guy's name, Capote Duncan. I think he has a viewpoint of like, oh, this is a girl I would want to marry. But I also like just want to have sex tonight. So I'm going to go to chaos. Like, she won't care because she gets it. Like, she knows that I'm obviously like, I have to have my needs met. And so she can fulfill my emotional needs and somebody else can fulfill my physical needs.
Yeah. So I feel like he's probably giving up on her because he tells her this, but you know, he's very respectful when she doesn't want to stay. He's like, oh, don't worry, I'll call you a car. But then he's also like, you know, they're just not on the same page, and he doesn't really have a problem with that, even though I think he can tell that it's going to be a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
But, you know, definitely better than the alternative, which is wanting something different from the other person and then trying to still get it, which if Charlotte continued to pursue him would be what she's doing, and more often is what like the male would do in that situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's very like respectful, which I think she immediately takes as like, oh, he's also like this kind of person. And it's like, no, he doesn't want that at all, but he is very respectful. That's true.
Yeah, he's like trying to fit into, you know, a box. Because, I mean, the way I see it, he's like trying to wife her up. But he's just trying to have sex. It would be like someone like Samantha.
What did you get from the wifing up angle? Maybe I missed some things.
Just being like really respectful and stuff, and like saying like, what are you doing next Saturday, and like he's like definitely wants to continue a relationship with Charlotte, and like is kind of playing into the stereotype of like, yeah, I'm gonna like, she could be the mother of my children, but like I'm gonna also like other people.
Oh, I kind of took it as he's like the guy from the opening, Tim or whatever. You know, like he's moving forward as part of this charade to date someone, which is like maybe this thing that a lot of people in New York are trapped in, where it's like when you've dated someone so long, then you like meet the parents. If you dated them this long, you like start looking at places. But ultimately, the people just wanted what they wanted originally. And if those don't line up, it's going to be a problem. But because they're going through all these predetermined steps of how to build a relationship, that it deceives the other person.
Oh.
And I guess I'm blaming the male in both of these cases for those. But,
I guess that makes sense. I think it's probably a little bit of both.
Let's agree to agree. And talk about Miranda Hobbs Esquire.
It's Miranda Hobbs' birthday, which is crazy because it's also my birthday.
That's right. Happy birthday, Addie.
Thank you. Happy birthday, Miranda.
Happy birthday, 30-something Miranda.
She's 30-something. And again, just with her girlfriends. And she's kind of got this idea that, like, all guys want one thing. She doesn't really have time for it. She's been burned too many times. She's, even with, like, a nice guy like Skipper, she's turned off by it because she thinks, as Carrie said, that he's mocking her with his kindness. What a sad existence.
Yeah. A quick aside, this episode refers to that as like her 30-something birthday. And I think when I first watched this show, I didn't really realize what that meant. It meant she's in her 30s. No, but...
I was like...
When I first watched it, I don't think I realized the difference, which I do now, being in my mid-30s, of like how young and immature I was when I was 30 compared to probably how complicated and mature my life will be when I'm like 39, how big of a range that is compared to 20 to 30, which for me was not that big of a range. I feel like that was a way more, like that was all just a mishmash. I was obviously like maturing during it, but like, and you could tell the difference between someone that's 20 and 30. I feel like in 30s, people, depending on how they're like keeping themselves together, can look basically the same age all the way through the 30s. But that's a way different part of your life when you're out of your 30s than when you've started your 30s. I don't think I ever really appreciated that until I was in my 30s.
And then you say 30-something because you're like, you don't want to know if I'm on the beginning end or late end of that.
Yeah. Or am I over the hill? Am I right? 1990 Spencer gift. gift card, whatever you call those, birthday card.
Yeah, I guess. Why don't you come back and ask me in about 10 years?
All right,
and I'll let you know how the 40s are seeming.
Will do. But I would say Miranda's main thesis for this episode is men are the worst. They don't want a relationship and they don't want to be used for sex because they'll like disconnect. So that is the dynamic she's in. I feel like Miranda and Carrie, like you said, they're kind of between Charlotte and Samantha. They're definitely between Charlotte and Samantha. But maybe the difference isn't how far they are to each direction, but more like how judgmental they are about it, whereas Carrie is more open and Miranda is more judgmental.
That's
maybe
true.
They're both in the same place, or like relatively the same place. They could wiggle around. But it's not that one of them is more Samantha or more Charlotte.
They're both definitely more static. I'm sorry, dynamic characters, and whereas Charlotte and Samantha are like holding down the different ends of the spectrum as really static characters, like their characteristics are pretty set in stone. Like, you know how they're going to react in any given situation, and it's probably going to be the opposite. And then Carrie and Miranda are probably going to be like fighting about something in the middle of that.
That's a good point. And I think that they really, Carrie and Miranda are more relatable because they take new information and learn from it. Whereas Samantha and Charlotte are half of the time proven right and half of the time proven completely wrong. And yet they refuse to move toward the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're only like to see the experiences like that prove themselves right as a triumph. Whereas like otherwise they're just kind of blind to it.
Yeah.
Although I would say that Charlotte and Samantha, they both like do evolve for sure. I guess they're not like completely unchanging, but
since we're just talking about the first episode, I would say like because they are still that way, that must have been how they are. We'll definitely see them change over the course of the thing.
But, yeah, how they are right now, yeah. And how they have
for Miranda right now, she's being portrayed as a person that would hate a really nice guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Skipper.
Skippy. I'm kidding.
So what do you think about Miranda and Skipper? Skippy.
So Miranda and Skipper, I think that in any other situation, they could have been a really good couple. I think that Skipper is kind of like Steve in a way, but more innocent. And I think Miranda just needs to have a more open mind about him. What do you think?
I think Skipper is kind of being set up to be a bigger character than he ends up being because he's like one of Carrie's friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read the columns. The other three ladies are not necessarily all friends with each other. They're just all friends of Carrie's. So like Skipper would just be another friend. But by like setting this up right away where Skipper's getting set up with Miranda, it's kind of setting up an awkward situation. I said set up too many times. It's kind of making an awkward situation if they were to continue to hang out now because they've been like clearly set up on a date.
Well, and friendship between Carrie and Skipper doesn't really make sense. I think like a friendship for the character that they build in the show, maybe in the book it's different, but with like Stanford, that's a different situation. Like he fits into that like kind of token gay friend that it was like kind of edgy in the late 90s. And Skipper is just like too much of a nerd. Like Carrie would not hang out with him.
Yeah. So Skipper, he's like the nice guy, which I think at this time would have been a more compelling plot than it is in 2020, where the nice man who's been like friend zoned is like way more toxic connotation now than it was back in 1998.
Yeah, and totally.
To the show's credit, I don't remember if they do this, but they haven't really set that up for that to be the case with him and Carrie. So not in a problem, but like there is, you know, whole internet communities full of people that think they're so nice and that's why they keep getting rejected, when actually it's because they're self-absorbed and misogynist and talk about all women like they're the same person.
Yeah. Friend zones now has such a connotation of like, oh, every woman that you come in contact with is like a conquest, and they are basically choosing to, like, you know, not give you what you deserve. So like in this situation, him being friend zoned by Carrie, it doesn't have that like weird, like awkward evil side. It's just that Skipper, like, I don't even know how would they have even met, though. That's the thing, is like their worlds do not collide. He would never be at Chaos if it wasn't for the girls. So
that's true.
It's like kind of weird that he's even part of the circle. And I think maybe that's just the show. I don't know if it's like that in the book.
So I wanted to mention that Skipper, when they introduce him during the interview segment, he's at his home on his computer, nerd, reading Mad Magazine's website. Or like a digital version of Mad Magazine, maybe from a CD-ROM. And so I think that's probably the problem. You know, Some people don't like really nice, passive people the way he's treating Miranda. I think it's kind of weird that Carrie would be okay with just setting them up like that, even though she knows it's going to go poorly, if she actually values him or her as a friend. But, you know, she didn't think too much about it, so I'm not going to blame her for it.
True. It wasn't malicious.
But he is like working really hard to try to appeal to Miranda. And I guess we should say at the end of the episode, they make out, even though he's too nice for her. I don't know. Let's go on to Samantha, though. She likes having sex with a man without feeling.
Well,
she's the one that proposes this.
You think that, but she's pretty disappointed when... Which, can I just comment on how incestuous this episode is? Like, everybody's just like, oh, let me hit on this guy. That didn't work. Okay, I guess Carrie's going to take him. Okay, I'm going to go on a date with this guy. Oh, now Samantha's going to take him. It's like...
But it's not like they're hanging out with a group. Yeah.
Like, are there not more dudes around?
There's no single guys in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah, right. So, Samantha in this episode is shooting her shot with Big. And she says that he's like the younger, hotter Donald Trump, which I don't know how that's appealing, but okay. And
no,
she tries,
younger and hotter, because he's not very young or hot.
She tries to like get him to smoke a cigar with him. He's not into it. And so then she ends up banging the guy that Charlotte was on a date with, which is like, okay.
Yeah, he starts by her out. That's good. Good move. Do you think Samantha's feelings were hurt when she's rejected by Big? Because she does her move, but, you know, it doesn't work. And I, the Taoist in me says that's meant to be, like, that move wasn't the move for that guy. And she seems fine later. But do you think her feelings are hurt in between those two guys?
I think she's, I mean, if you're gonna put her into the box of having sex like a man, her ego is probably hurt, but I don't think her feelings are hurt. So I think she, like, rebounds pretty quickly because she's just like, well, that didn't work out. I tried that. Didn't work out. Let me go try this.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I remember one time I knew a guy who was really good at having the relations with lots of people, and I didn't like him at all. And I was like, how did he hook up with so many people? And then one time I was at a party where he showed up later, and he just tried it on everybody.
Yeah.
And then he eventually found someone that went for it. And I was like, oh, it's a numbers game. Whereas, like,
yeah,
for me,
totally.
I like, if I do that with one person and then they're like, no, I'm like, maybe I am ugly and suck. And then I just leave the party.
And then you just
so
go
you
got to
have like
uh-huh.
the resilience.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Like I can't even imagine like having the confidence to go to the next person after like the first person has like very clearly identified that they are not interested. But, you know,
I mean, Big did kind of let her down. Easy, like maybe next time, but it was kind of condescending. And obviously, she, if you're going to be that out there in requesting something like that, then you do have to expect that you could get rejected, you know. So, I think she knows that'll happen, and there's always somebody,
right? I think that's the illusion to people that don't act like that is they assume it must be working so often, but the reality is it is a numbers game. It is like a lot of failure and keep trying, and you have to roll with that.
Yeah.
But
totally.
What about Carrie? What about romance?
Well, Carrie's just a sexual anthropologist, not a hooker, but I think she's like, she doesn't realize that she has actually been having sex kind of like a man, if you're going to go in those terms, because she reveals that she's never been in love, and, it like hits her like a ton of bricks. Like she doesn't even realize that she's never been in love. And it's really sad.
Yeah. I think she probably thought she was in love with people like Kurt Harrington over and over again. But to be asked that later when you're not feeling it in the moment and to have someone say absolutely instead of, oh, I guess not because it didn't work out. She realizes there's something she's missing, or that like maybe not even something she wasn't getting. Maybe those relationships ran their course like natural, but that she was saying to herself that she hadn't been in love because they didn't work out, when in fact, love is something you have, not something that someone else can take away as soon as you break up.
Exactly. That's like it's the perspective. It's your reality at that moment. That doesn't mean that later on, you can say, oh, I thought I was in love. I mean, if you thought at that time you were in love, then you were in love, you know? I mean, you can't define mm-hmm. it that way. And so I think Big is showing that he is not at peace with his past, but is grounded enough to say, like, yes. And Carrie's not grounded enough to say, oh, that was what I was experiencing. She just is so unsure of herself that she doesn't really realize.
Right. I think she thinks that love is something that you find, maybe. Charlotte's thinking it's something you find, definitely. But Big is kind of offering something, like, love is something you experience.
And, yeah, totally.
And he has that. He says he's in love. He's, like, obviously hitting on her. He's not in love with the person he's talking about anymore. Or maybe he is, but he's not. That's not affecting his actions anymore, but the love is still there. And she hasn't experienced that. Instead, she's like, look at that idiot. Let's go have sex again. This time I don't care, you know?
Yeah, I know. And there's something really powerful about being like, yeah, I do know what love is. So if it were to hit me again, I would know it. And yeah, there's something like really naive about saying like, no, I guess I haven't ever been in love. And it's just like this power dynamic that is really evident from the get-go. So I'm glad we can agree on that.
I'm glad too. Yeah. She's like, even though Kurt Harrington's teeth are too big, let's have sex.
And then she's like, oh, this guy. I guess he's Mr. Big.
Mr. Big.
Like, how did that even start? I don't know.
I don't know. He's just so powerful. In the podcast, the Origins, about the history of Sex and the City, I think Candace Bushnell talked about how you spend your young life thinking you want to be with Mr. Big and having all the power from him, and then eventually you realize you want to be Mr. Big, and that's the journey that she thinks women need to go on. We'll see if the show does that, but that's what Candace Bushnell says. So let's go to our next segment. It is unique to this podcast, and it's called Who Would We Be in this episode out of the four.
Who would you be?
I mean,
it has to be out of the four.
Yeah, I don't know. Stanford? No, not at all. He's going after a model that works for his agency. That's totally inappropriate.
But I think Stanford's also not part of the four.
That's right. He's a five. But he's in the first episode, so I think maybe we should include him. But I don't know. I guess today I'm feeling more like... we're just Samantha. No, we're just Carrie. I don't know. I'll say Charlotte this time, because I think I like her standards.
I would be like Skipper, but he's not
really. Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Anybody in the that's too limiting. You're right.
Because I feel like Skipper, he's like open for love. He's open for a new experience. He's open to meeting Miranda, and even when she's kind of mean to him, he still is trying to connect. And then he also goes for it by just making out with her. I think that's awesome. So, yeah, I'm Skipper.
That's okay. Maybe I'm Big this time. I don't even like him that much, but...
Absolutely.
He's just like, I'll be your taxi. I don't know how big New York is, but let's drive over to where your house is. I got nothing to do. I'm so rich.
Yeah.
I don't even like cigars, even though I love cigars.
There you go. You're
Maybe
big.
I'm Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm Big. All right. Let's go to that's going to be our Dundies, so let's not do that. Let's go to our rating for this episode on a scale of 7. It goes like this. 7 out of 7 is absolutely.
6 out of 7 is a rent control department overlooking the park.
5 out of 7 is Manolo Bla... What is this?
Damn, Manolo Blahnik.
Manolo Blanca?
Manolo Blahnik. Oh my gosh, they say it in the first episode, Nathan. This is... Fashion show at brunch 101.
What is it? What is
Manolo Blahnik? Look it up.
Okay. maybe we should just rate the episode on 7. We'll like name them later.
No, this is important.
Oh, okay. 4 out of 7 is I love you, but I love me more.
3 out of 7, no one goes there anymore.
2 out of 7, I curse the day you were born.
1 out of 7, my entire life sucks.
All right. I don't even know how to rate this episode, but I'll come up with something. There we go.
I'm going to give it, 3.
Ready?
2, 1. No one goes there anymore.
No one goes there anymore. Yes.
I mean, I was going to give it I love you, but I love me more, but it goes so much. It goes so uphill from here. Like, first episode, meh.
We didn't even talk about the awkward documentary interviewing of the toxic bachelors. I hate that. I don't think it works at all.
Neither do I. And I don't think that Carrie talking directly to the camera works either. And I don't think that those like weird editing, like freeze frame moments where she like realizes she's never been in love, I don't think that works.
No.
So as we go on, hopefully we'll be able to give Manolo Blahnik and Rent Control Department and absolutely a little bit more.
At the time, this was an amazing show because what was on television was mostly just sitcoms and really bad shows that like people said this reminded them of a movie. They got a movie director to do it. And, you know, the interviews were something they were trying out. There's one really awkward one where it's interviewing the guy, the toxic bachelor, while he's working out. And then it interviews him while he's climbing a rock wall. And then the next time the camera is like at the top of the rock wall going down at him. And he's like,
so bad.
Why don't they just marry a big fat guy? Yeah, we don't really like that stuff, but this show is revolutionary, but it's going to get a lot better, so, you know.
It's HBO, so anything can happen.
And it's not TV, it's HBO.
That's right. All right.
Great.
Thanks for tuning in, Skippy.
Skipper, happy birthday, Addie.
Thank you, and happy birthday to Miranda. I'm 30-something.
20. No, you're not.
You don't know.
I don't know you. Okay. Let us know if you like this podcast and never mind. Whatever.
And let us know if you know Sarah Jessica Parker so we can interview her.
Yeah. I was going to say, talking to the camera, total Sarah Jessica Parker's husband Matthew Broderick move in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Ba-doom.
Ba-dum-tsh.
Ba-dum-tsh. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Okay, I'm going to refresh.
No, no, refresh.
I'm kidding.
Stop.
I'm kidding. Ha ha ha!